I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
It's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
But we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, bitch, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, so you guys are introducing the great Karen Kotowski, the recipient of the 2018 Sam Adams Award. Welcome to the show. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very good to talk to you again. Well, I can't believe you didn't already win this thing, but now you did. And I guess, I guess people don't know. This is the Whistleblower Award from, what is the name of the group? Ray McGovern's group here?
Well, it's the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity and Intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And it's mainly the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. That's probably who you see more emails from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ray McGovern, a bunch of people that you know that you have on the show all the time. They are kind of behind this. And then, you know, there's a lot of people who have won this award, and I'm sure many others that will in the future and should have won it. But it's real, you know, I'm hugely honored to be picked this year. And I think, it's really because of that Rob Reiner film, Shock mm-hmm. and Awe.
Shock and Awe. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. It's so funny because I've known you since, 2004, if not three.
Sooner, yeah.
Since we've been talking. And then certainly known Jonathan Landay formerly from Knight Ridder and then McClatchy Newspapers, and I forget where he's at now, for many years too. And I knew that he was the first reporter to write the Office of Special Projects in the Pentagon, and that was in the fall of 2002. I forget.
Yeah.
Sometime in 2002. Anyway, it turns out you're the source for that. And that's the scene in the movie is you give them that story. And I should have known that. How did I not put two and two together about that and figure out that you were Landay's source for that?
Yeah, well, actually, Warren Strobel is the guy. I was Warren Strobel.
Oh, okay. They were partners at the time.
They were partners.
Yeah.
And when I was in the Pentagon, my name's Kotowski. That's mm-hmm. K plus 10 other letters that nobody wants to pronounce. And so my nickname in the Pentagon there, in both a couple of offices that I worked in, was K-10. And they do refer in the movie to K-10. That was Warren's source. And it was the lady that they had, used to display me or whatever was, nothing like me, of course, in physical sense. And she also wasn't in the uniform. She wasn't wearing a uniform in the in the movie. So, and they didn't really know who it was. They didn't know if it was me. They didn't know it was an active duty military person, an officer. They didn't know that. And then the movie came out, of course, and then 15 years later, what have I got to lose? Big fat nothing. In fact, anybody who'd followed it kind of knew. You knew. I mean, so many people had read stuff that I'd written, and they read the American Conservative 3-part series, which really outlined the whole thing. Of course, that was done after I retired. But when I was talking to Warren, it was the summer and fall. Late summer and fall and winter of 2002, 2003. And I showed up in uniform when I had meetings with him. But I only, had one meeting, and everything else was done electronically.
I see. Very interesting. And then so for the people who were too young or they were a bad guy then or they just didn't know this part of the story, this was a huge part of the story that, you put it, in Rumsfeld's shop. That was the first of the series for the American Conservative magazine. It's in Rumsfeld's shop, conscientious objector and open door policy. Oh, I kind of forgot about that one for a minute, Karen.
Yeah.
But in Rumsfeld's shop, there was a whole, not the DIA like you would have, but a whole separate neoconservative intelligence gathering operation. Is that what you would call it?
Yeah. And they were gathering intelligence using the tax-funded intelligence system and backbone. They're going through you know, our government computers and any data that had been scooped up from any of the intelligence agencies. So they're looking at it, but they're not conducting, they're not preparing intelligence. They're picking bits and pieces, mostly out of context, and some of it that had never been verified. In fact, some of it had been verified to be false, and it was, you know, if you take that paragraph or that phrase that says this is verified to be false or this didn't happen, and you just put the front part, it looks like it happened. So they were creating a storyline, creating the background papers and everything that would support what the politicians were doing. Now, of course, Cheney himself is really kind of orchestrating a lot of this. And, you know, you're familiar. You've talked about this a bunch of times. I mean, it's well known that Cheney personally traveled to the CIA multiple times. I mean, he pressured actual analysts, which is uncalled for. You know, I mean, never. When would you have the vice president talking to analysts? But this huge amount of pressure put on them. And he's orchestrating this. His former people that had worked in his office were in charge of Southeast Near Asia. They were in charge of, you know, OSP. He's picking and placing people. He's running this show. Okay, that's Cheney. And he knew they were making up a story. Cheney lied. There's no doubt. It is not yet clear that President Bush, you know, did he lie or did he get taken for a ride? I mean, we know. In fact, Larry Wilkerson, who was chief of staff for Colin Powell, you had Larry on, I'm sure, right? You've talked to Larry.
Uh-huh.
So Larry gave if you look at the video, it's not been broken down yet. So Larry gave an introductory speech, which was really about current events and the neocons and that kind of thing. And he talked a little bit about the what happened with Colin Powell. And of course, you saw that in the movie, too, the Colin Powell testimony verbatim. I mean, the actual video is incorporated into the movie. Now, Colin Powell asked a lot of the right questions, but he still ended up getting kind of taken for this ride and being made to participate in what he, I think, suspected in parts were lies, but he wasn't 100% sure. So I'm going to give Colin Powell kind of he probably got, you know, lied to a little bit. And
well,
maybe
the thing is, if you zoom in that closely, like, did they know that this specific lie was tortured out of Al-Libi or Abu Zubaydah? Or did they know that this cartoon of a mobile biological weapons lab drawn up by Clapper's department, that those specific things were based on specific lies? Well, probably not, because they weren't asking those questions. But did Powell and Bush both know that they were shopping for a bill of goods and that the duty of the intelligence community was to come up with an excuse to attack Iraq, to come up with something good enough to scare the people enough to let us do this? Absolutely. They knew they were lying.
They knew. And they also, I think we're coming to, as a society in the 15 years it's gone by, you know, post 9/11, whatever, you know, we had Obama. And we had W, of course, and all the wars that W promised not to get into when he campaigned, then did all that. And then Obama, who continued them. And I think the Obama era was really important in getting people to realize it doesn't matter who it is. They're all lying to you because, you know, Obama was hope and change, and he was nothing but W2. So, you know, a continuation of these policies. And then you have Trump, who half the population in this country, half the voters in this country, absolutely do not respect in any way, shape, or form and don't like. And this is good in many ways because, you know, it causes us to question, you know, their qualifications. We should be questioning all of their qualifications, not just Trump, all of them, and also their motivations. And we do that now with Trump. We did that. A great many people in this country did that with Obama after it became clear he wasn't really giving us hope or change. And this is a really good thing because these people that are running our country and called deep state, the president's part of it, his staff, all these people, they're extremely arrogant. They're extremely, you know, we are running things. And so their view of the intelligence community is just what you said. And they don't see anything wrong with it. They see the intelligence community as a tool for them to do what they want to do. It's not just specific to one particular president or W or even Cheney. And if you look at our history, of course, and you know this, we've done this forever. Presidents say, you know, what do I got to justify what I want to do? And of course, what he wants to do, he or she, is of course what the deep state wants to do. And then we can talk about why we have these wars.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you're featured in the documentary. Someone was asking me recently, what's a good war documentary I should watch? I said, Why We Fight. It's got a lot of Karen Katowski in there talking about the neocons and a lot of people talking about all the money to be made in and outside the Pentagon, all the contractors and all the arms manufacturers and all the lobbyists and all the bankers too, servicing all those transactions and all the government debt and all the everything. Yeah. Who's not in on it?
That's right. Well, you know, it's a shame too, because these Democrats are so wrapped around the axle, the ones that got elected in Pelosi's crowd, and that there's this party is such a warmongering Democratic party, at least the 50 and over side of the House is. And that's who, I mean, these Democrats are older even than Republicans in the House. They're very aged people, I'm sorry to say. And this that generation of Democrats is a bunch of warmongers. They love war. They love the money that they think war makes, even not realizing the terrible destruction of everything that war does. In their mind, hey, this is profitable. I'm being sponsored by these people. I can get reelected because these people want war and I can vote for it. And yet that party has a beautiful opportunity now, especially since they have a pretty good, well, not so big, but they do have the House. They have the House. And they are in a position to shut down, or I should say shut down Trump's warlike tendencies, if that's the case, because we never know from day to day, or to support Trump's peace-oriented tendencies, whichever the day it is. These Democrats have this huge opportunity to do that, and they would look, you know, if they're shutting down Trump, this is a great thing. If they're not shutting him down, if he actually takes a peaceful turn in any given decision, you know, they could support that in there. They would actually, that would give them more integrity as a party. Right. And yet they're not doing it. They're not doing anything. So
and on the other side of it, it'd be a great way for him to really stick to them, for him to be Trump the Great by ending all the wars and then letting all the Democrats attack him from the right all they want and see what good it does them. You know, if that's what you want to look at. But anyway, let's talk more about what a hero you are. So first of all, tell us about David Hackworth and Soldiers for the Truth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, back in the day, there was of course, David Hackworth, he doesn't really need a huge introduction. He was a most highly decorated soldier living it for a while there, and had a lot of experience in Korea. I don't even know if he might have had some World War II time. I don't know, but he served throughout a number of American conflicts and made his way all the way to full colonel. Very, very well-known guy. And then he wrote a bunch of books, and he had a flamboyant type of presentation. He was very forceful, very, very much a newsmaker, kind of attracted news. Anyway, he had a Soldiers for the Truth website. And when I first, in the fall, early fall, late summer of 2002.
Wait, let me add a couple things about him real quick. First of all, he was kind of a right winger in the sense of, like, in the 1990s, he was very much an AM talk radio guest, not so much Rush Limbaugh, but a lot of the other guys, and including kind of Fox News. So he had that kind of, unlike a lot of sort of the reputation of veterans who came home from Vietnam and kind of turned into hippies, he had turned against the war, but he had not turned left at all in any sense. And also he had sort of, as from everything I knew from his shtick from the 1990s and that kind of thing, was his whole thing essentially was class war, that the enlisted men, they are American human men. The officers are this alien enemy force trying to destroy these wonderful enlisted boys that need protecting by the likes of Hackworth. And so, and then of course the think tank eggheads and the crooked politicians and the perfumed princes as he called them, like Wesley Clark. And certainly he would have included David Petraeus. Those guys were the bad guys and the enlisted men were the heroes. And so that was the frame of, you know, everything was, you know, is this going to be good for the enlisted men? And if it's not, is the sacrifice necessary? Because if it's not, then there's going to be hell to pay for you by me. That was kind of his whole thing. And because he was a colonel, he absolutely could essentially begin everything he said with, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you, this is the deal. And he absolutely was against Iraq War II. And I don't know if he did everything he could, but certainly everything I heard from him in 2002 and 2003 was him explaining to talk radio audiences, here's why not to do this. Number one, number two, and really knew what he was talking about and was really forceful about it, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. He's a hero right there. I mean, this man made it his life's work after he got out of after he retired, you know, to inform people and, you know, you're right. I didn't remember that, but he did not go off to the left side or seek a political party's, you know, we're going to advocate for this party over another. He understood about war and spoke really the truth. And anyway, I knew a little about him and I knew a little about his website. But what I had done, in the Pentagon, frustrated, I started writing these little short, very short little vignettes. And they were kind of entertaining, I thought. They were entertaining to me, and they helped me blow off some steam about what I was seeing. And I initially had, when I got to the point, and I shared them with my friends and buddies, and they laughed and stuff. So, you know, nodded their head kind of thing. And so then I contacted Lou Rockwell, who I had been reading since about, since he started in 1998, 99. And, I sent it to Lou and I said, but I can't, you know, I got these have to, if you publish these, if you'd like to publish them, you can, but it has to be done anonymously because I can't, obviously, I'll, this kind of, even though it wasn't very significant disagreement, it was significant disagreement, but I mean, it wasn't very harmful to this system, but I would have been probably routed out and done some jail time, I'm sure, based on where I had been working. So I told him it has to be anonymous. And he says, we don't do that. Lou Rockwell said, we don't do that. So my second choice was I sent him to Hackworth's website. Well, Hackworth kind of managed that. And I think he had another guy there helping him. But in any case, I did. And I heard back immediately from Colonel Hackworth. He asked a few questions, but he seemed to know what I was saying was true, or the perspective that I was taking was accurate. And I was surprised actually, because, you know, another thing about Hackworth is he didn't believe women should be certainly in the combat troops of the military. He did not, he was very outspoken about that because he had seen war and that was, a big part of, he believed, and I think rightfully in some ways, that this would be dangerous to the troops, so he opposed that. So I didn't know what his view towards me specifically, because obviously I identified who I was and he, you know, why I needed it to not have my name associated. Anyway, he jumped on it. And it was only months later, maybe even after I got out, that I realized that I was not, of course, his only source in the system. He had literally probably hundreds of not just fans, but people that he knew personally. People in various parts of the Pentagon and in the intelligence community, probably the State Department too, that were all communicating with him. And he knew what I was saying was just one piece and a very well-fitting piece of the puzzle. So anyway, he agreed to publish them. And at that point, I think I actually, after the first couple, had a login and I just posted them directly. And most of them were posted right out of the Pentagon, right off my government computer. I mean, again, it was after 9/11, but it, you know, obviously 10, 15 years, especially after Ed Snowden and some of this stuff, they've cracked down on computer security quite a bit. Right. So what I did was not unsafe in the time frame that I did it. If a person did that now, they would be quickly shut down, I'm pretty sure. So what? You just go home and do it off your home computer.
More whistleblowers. Yeah, it's not over yet. They can, you know, they could go to the sandwich shop and log in at the.
Absolutely. You know, oh my goodness. And you know, we didn't have Proton Mail or we didn't have Hush Mail. Of course, Hush Mail, they've moved their server back to Delaware, so that's no good. But, you know, there's Proton Mail. There's any number of automatic encrypted chat and email services.
And you know what? I think it's fair to say that, honestly, when you're talking about sending 19-year-olds who don't know the first thing about it to go possibly get their legs and their manhood blown off and maybe their entire life ended in Afghanistan or, you know, hunting down missiles for the Saudis in Yemen or on some errand out there like that, then people who are, you know, more like in the position that you were in inside the Pentagon and that kind of thing, if they're asking the physical courage from the 19-year-olds, they ought to have the moral courage to, you know, hey, maybe even go to prison in
That's
order
right.
to
That's
tell
right.
the truth to protect them, right?
That's right.
It's the same
That's
thing
right.
as risking your life to provide cover fire for your other guys, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's actually much less than that because, you know, we're not going to get disfigured. We're not going to, be in a wheelchair the rest of our life because we told the truth about what we were seeing. It's not even remotely that dangerous. You know, I hate to say, we have, and some of the recipients have done, well, several of the recipients, Kirikou, Chelsea Manning, you know, these guys have done, guys and gals have done jail time for their acts of conscience. But, you know, they weren't, this is it truly, I'm sorry, it doesn't compare to some of the stuff that's happened to these very innocent patriots who believed what their government was telling them and volunteered to go over there. And you know, it just burns me. For all the folks that are hurt, they go, well, it's an all-volunteer force. Well, you know what? That works if you're telling the truth. If your government is lying to you, it's not really the same as an all-volunteer force.
Right. Because you're, and when the American people, the so-called sovereign, civilian, supreme, you know, creators of this republic here, abdicate all responsibility to discuss and debate these subjects for fear of hurting the soldiers' feelings. And then, you know, when the soldiers think that premise number one is that the democracy, as in, you know, the adult population of the society, are bothering to notice whether it's worth it to send them to war or not.
It's crazy. It's
crazy. I mean, and you hear soldiers say, whether they're talking about Vietnam or even in the terror wars, they say, my country sent me over there, then my country doesn't care about me and this and that. And it's like, well, you know, it depends on how you use those terms, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty much right.
Yep. It's true. And you know, we have an opportunity as every, you know, generation or we get more and more, you know, younger people and the older folks pass away or become less active. You know, things change a little bit in our culture. The parties have some role to play, and both of those political parties are the main ones that are, you know, the ones that field all these congressmen that vote for these wars. Both of them have a pro-war side, but also both those parties are fragmenting into, you know, on the Republican side, you have kind of a liberty, 1930s Republican, America First type thing where they're very cautious about interventions in war, don't want to pay for it, that, you know, they're more of the traditional conservative, and also the valuing of freedom and liberty. And then Democrat Party, a lot of the young Democrats, they care about justice. Yeah, maybe they like a little socialism. They don't know what it is. You know, they're interested in it. I hope they learn more, and I'm sure that they will as time goes on. But these people aren't warmongers. The warmongers are the over 50 crowd in both parties, for the most part, who have been elected over and over again. And I'm just, frankly, okay, I got an email today, said, call the Congress, call Pelosi's office, and tell the majority leader's whatever she is next time select, she's going to be the soon, tell her to make sure that the hearing on getting out of the Yemen war and stopping the war on Yemen happens, and so they don't keep blocking it, which is what they've been doing. They keep blocking it. Both parties are participating in this. And I thought to myself, Pelosi, she's 82 years old. What is going on here?
Yeah.
By
the way, are you ever going to run for Congress again?
I don't think so. No, you know, that's a bad thing about running for any big office.
I mean,
like that.
I would start a war for the chance to see you in Ron Paul's spot in the House of Representatives, just to have one person up there getting it right, Karen. It would be so great.
Well, it would be fun, but yeah, so far I've not. And we've actually, of course, Hugh Goodlatte, who I was upset about, and that was who I primaried in 2012. He has decided after, I guess, 13 terms to step down, and we did elect another person. And I will say this, the machine, Goodlatte's machine elected this guy. There's absolutely no doubt. We saw, because I'm a participant in Republican Party politics. Mm-hmm. I'm still the same advocate for, I'm an anti-war advocate and whatnot. And I say what I think, but in order not to have somebody else take the space, I take the space and I can see what they're doing. And I participate and try to move in the right direction. That is a futile thing to do, by the way, but I'm there doing that. So it was Goodlatte's machine that elected this guy. And he did have face competition by the Democrats. We have a little blue wave going on here. It didn't wipe him out, but there was a lot of Democratic voters. Anyway, the guy says, Klein is his name. He says he's going to be part of the Freedom Caucus, that he's going to associate with Amash and Massey and all these guys and Jordan. You know, that's what he says. So we'll see what happens. I think that I take that. In fact, he and the other Republican who was almost would have been the other choice, both of them were running on the same exact ticket, the same exact platform I ran on in 2012. So I do consider that a victory. I don't think that I have to be there if we can change the conversation. We did change the conversation. However, I don't trust them. See, with you, you know, Scott, if it was me, there's,
yeah, that, it really does come down to the individual at the end of the day, you know,
yeah. For so sure. These guys, it's hard to say if we could have trusted either one of them, and Klein was the less trustworthy of the two. They were both running on very much the same platform.
Hey guys, here's how to help support the show. First of all, buy my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. Everybody likes it. It's got great reviews. Read the paperback, the Kindle, or the audiobook, and the EPUB is available at Barnes & Noble and everywhere else online as well. Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. And also, I take donations. If you go to scotthorton.org/donate, you'll see the kickbacks. You can get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks, or a silver commodity disc for any donation of $100. And you get a signed copy of Fool's Errand for $50. So that ain't too bad. And anyone who donates by way of PayPal or patreon.com/ScottHortonShow, $5 or more per month, and you'll get access to the private subreddit, the new Reddit group there at r/ScottHortonShow. And all new signers, uppers to Patreon also get 2 free audiobooks as well. And yes, I take every kind of cryptocurrency, most especially Horizon, but also Bitcoin and the rest of them too. So check all that out at scotthorton.org/donate and patreon.com/ScottHortonShow. Thanks. Oh yeah, and don't forget to shop amazon.com by way of my link at the bottom of my page at scotthorton.org. You'll see it there. Your archive going all the way back to including all the Soldiers for the Truth stuff for David Hackworth, if I remember right, is all posted at LRC.
Yeah, so pretty. It should be all
at
there.
Some point, the full archive was transferred from Hackworth's site to lewrockwell.com. So people can read the stuff that you were writing anonymously from the Pentagon, watching in real time as your boss, Bill Luddy, was also part of the Office of Special Plans with Abram Shulsky and Douglas Feith and all the guys lying us into war there. And there's real important journalism about it, too. Just, you know, we mentioned the American Conservative series about it, In Rumsfeld's Shop, Conscientious Objector, and Open Door Policy, featuring Israelis, very interestingly, in that one. And then there was the new Pentagon Papers at Salon.com. That was a good one. And then Jason Vest and Bob Dreyfus wrote The Lie Factory. And Vest also wrote The Men from Jinsa. Let's see, there's the what got you the award here was your leaking to Strobel and Landay working together at Knight Ridder. And all of those archives can be found at McClatchyDC.com. You have to search around. It's not that easy to find, but they do have them all. 2001, they were already publishing, you know, anti-weapons of mass destruction stuff in there.
Those guys are great, and they are the models of what any large media or small media should be doing, and so it's really great.
I think almost all those articles that I mentioned there. I mean, there are a lot about the neocons, but almost all those are centered around you, and of course, the first 4 I mentioned, they're written by you, and then of course, as I mentioned, the archive at LRC, because this was such a big deal, the way that they did this, and. It's so instructive who did it and how they did it and how it all worked there and your point of view on how that all unfolded. The separate government, as Colin Powell later called it, that Cheney and the neocons set up inside the first Bush Jr. term there.
That's right. That's right. And I'll tell you, this information is good for people. Anybody slightly interested in this should go look at it, because a lot of it is kind of happening again. And if you, I am not the Jinsa, the men from Jinsa that Jason Vest put together.
Yeah.
That, and of course, anything that I've written, because I certainly named the names and provided links in any articles that I published there. But if you look at the people, and you mentioned Luddy and Feith and all these guys, if you look at these names, and then you actually closely study and look at what's happening today and where some of these people are, John Bolton, of course, we're very familiar with John Bolton. He, of course, you know, national security advisor, and he has brought up many of these same people into the White House. So it's not just John Bolton up there. There's a whole bunch of people, people he's hired to help him with national security stuff, appointees that he has influenced. And these are some of the same names. They're just 15 years older. It's the exact same people. Their agenda, I don't think, has changed. They are interested in using the United States' reputation and resources to sow chaos for one of our friends in the Middle East and their allies. Okay, obviously I'm talking about Israel and Saudi Arabia. This sowing of chaos in support of Israel and Saudi Arabia is all what Yemen is about. We have no fight in Yemen. We have no strategic interest, unless we're planning on, owning the port of Aden. I don't know what they have planned, but this is wrong. What's happening, and the people that are advocating it and that are articulating this to the current president are many of the same people. And this is a little bit scary. Now, Trump is a little bit different than Obama or W. He's different. He comes from a different place. I think he is an excellent reader of people. I think maybe, he's not, he likes to be in charge. So he doesn't like people telling him what he has to do and what he doesn't have to do. I think W was quite comfortable in being told what to do.
I mean, to me, Donald Trump is just a perfect image of Obama in every way, including the attacks over the legitimacy of his presidency, which under Obama were spearheaded by Trump. Ha ha. So even though I think all this Russia stuff is nonsense, there's kind of no one who deserves it more than him in terms of calling someone called a unrightful usurper and all this kind of thing. But then when it comes to rolling over for the generals on Afghanistan and Yemen and Somalia and Syria and everything, he whimpers and then he rolls over just like Barack.
He does. But, he fires more people, I think, than Obama did. And I like that. Because people don't know when the hammer's going to come down, and they don't know why it will come down. It could be wakes up on the wrong side of the bed and somebody gets fired. So I think that unpredictability and the fact that he is willing to let people go and move people around.
I have to admit, actually, last night, me and the wife were talking about, wow, I wonder who's going to be the new chief of staff, because that could mean everything, right? What if he named Doug Bandow?
Oh, wow. Wouldn't that be something? Yeah. Yeah, or Doug Fife.
Yeah, right. Or Doug McGregor.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting to watch it all.
And, by the way, it doesn't have to be someone named Doug,
No, it doesn't. No. It doesn't. There are plenty. There's some acceptable Dougs out there that we could have.
Not Fife, though.
No, not at all. But Trump is, I don't know, some of the things he says, I do like. I mean, he talks about on the same day that Pompeo, this is last week, I guess, on the 4th, Pompeo says, we're ending the INF treaty, 60 days. Both the U.S., we act like we're the only ones that follow. No, the U.S. does not follow the INF treaty. We're in violation of that thing, just like the Russians are. So it's like, we act like we're all holier than everybody. But the fact that he said, okay, we're going to get out of that. And that, of course, has implications. I mean, some very dangerous ones. And perhaps, depending on what comes next, maybe good things. I don't know. If it's replaced by another treaty that covers things that needs to cover with more signatories, it could be a good thing. But at the same day that Pompeo made that speech, Trump tweeted about how expensive, the arms race is. Well, it is expensive. And I'm glad that he tweeted that it was. I mean, that shows something.
He already took that back. And he says that now he wants the next one to be another $33 billion higher. 733 for next year. So, 750. Sorry.
Yeah. But I do
keep up, Karen. He's already flip flopped that waffle.
That's not good. But I do think he's a progressive. I think he'll work very well with the Democrats. Unfortunately, the Democrats are warmongers. And so the next year
and is getting worse.
Getting worse. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, the more they do warmonger, we are going to see generational breaks in the Congress where the younger people in all of the both parties are opposing the older people of both parties. And of course, the eternally young Ron Paul is with the younger people.
Tell you what, that Thomas Massie, I don't know everything about him and his entire voting record or whatever, but I think I really like that guy. I think he could be the Ron Paul of the House, if he's willing. I think, in fact, if he has a problem, it's the same one as Ron, is that he's too nice. Mm-hmm. And kind of needs to be a little bit meaner to be a better fighter. But he's apparently seems to be good on everything, as far as I know.
He's extremely good, and he lives a life that we would be familiar with. You know, when he goes home, he chops wood and takes care of his bees, and just you know he's a really interesting guy and experiments with stuff because he's an engineer. He's an engineer minded guy, right. But yeah, but I'll tell you too, the power. I mean, it's growing. The liberty type language, the anti-war language, it's growing. War is expensive and it's stupid and it kills people and it causes all this pain and anxiety. It's not really a win-win for anybody but the banks and a few politicians and maybe some oil people and whatnot. So, you know, when there's people that are like Massey and others, and the fact that they may be a little soft-spoken and they're friendly and nice, that's not bad because they're spending, they're communicating. People will listen to people like that. And, and you know, a lot of times our arguments, our debates, you know, if you
that really just shows how corrupt I am. That's my objection to him.
but I think, you know, a lot of people, because my brother, who we share many of the same ideals, but he's gone off he's way on the Democratic Socialist bandwagon, and it's very different than how I was raised and different from how he was. But our goals are very similar, both hardcore anti-war. So as long as we're talking about anti-war, we're good. And I think the more we talk, the language of war and the cost of war and the stupidity of it and the fact that the people getting us into these wars are idiots. You know, we need to talk about that. It's fair to call them an idiot. I mean, I don't want to insult legitimate idiots. I mean, but these guys are really unqualified to make these decisions about getting us into wars, getting us into interventions that are going to lead to wars. You know, some of the things we're doing is just, it's nuts. And the other bad thing, this is a negative, and I think I mentioned it in my talk a little bit, but, you know, our base building has continued unabated. We may have fewer bases in Germany, but we've got bases everywhere. In Syria, we have these monster bases. Do you know that on the
right,
east side?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, there's a new piece out. I think it was in Politico or something about the army base out there in Syrian Kurdistan, a huge one.
Yeah, yeah. So we're doing, and then if you look at the big map, you know, you can see we're surrounding Russia, we're surrounding Iran. You know, we have this huge plan that if you decide to sell your oil on anything but the U.S. dollar, you know, we're going to go to war with you. I mean, I still honestly think a lot of it has to do with resources. But Scott, yes. there's a guy who he wrote a dissertation and he dedicated it to me. I was pretty honored, and I did help him a little bit, not much help him, but whatever. Anyway, he's a intel. He wrote it on the intel breakdown of the time frame that we're talking about, back in 2002-03. And anyway, as part of his research, he actually interviewed Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and all these guys. I mean,
really?
All the way. Yeah.
A guy that dedicated his thing to you interviewed them for it. That's.
Yeah. And he did it in such a way that they all thought, because he said.
Can I get a copy of that?
Yeah, I'll send you what's the unpublished one. He did it in the University of Calgary, and he kept it on non-American servers the whole time. He's got a lot of background information that's not in, it's well documented in the actual dissertation, but even the Calgary, University of Calgary people told him, there's stuff in here. We're not going to allow you to say that because Canada will get hurt by the U.S. when you say these things. And even though they're completely honest, well documented, and true, he had to water it down a little bit, kind of like you say, Massey, you know, well, sometimes you got to water stuff down. We water it down a little bit, but it's still very powerful. But all the time when he was doing the research with the actual players of this time, and this is, of course, he finished it up, I think, year and a half ago, maybe a year ago. I know it came out last spring, published. Anyway, his to get the interviews, and part of his process was to say to them, I am researching the intelligence community failure, and you guys are going to help me understand how our intelligence community failed you as decision makers. Which
right.
They're happy. So they're offering him jobs and all this stuff, and he's still on their friendly list.
That is awesome. I can't wait to read that thing.
Let me tell you, Scott, I'm going to hook you up with this guy on Proton Mail, and I think we'll hear more from him. He has got two PhDs, and he's an SES. He was an SES-3 in the Trump administration. That's how high up he is. Hmm. And, of course, former military. And the interesting thing about his work, and it's like you know, we all come to where we are through a pathway, right? And his, he started out in the Army as a criminal investigator. So he writes, he knows how to do crime, he knows how to do crime investigation. That's how he approached this, because it was a crime. It was certainly a crime. Anyway, it's, he's out of the country now, working at the EU on a 5-year contract. So he is.
I'm sorry, Karen. I'm so over time here. I'm supposed to be interviewing David Swanson about Pearl Harbor, and I'm being so rude to him right now because I love talking to you so much. But
I miss you. It's because I miss you, Scott.
I know. It's great to talk to you again. I'm so sorry that it got scheduled this way, but I definitely hope we can do this again soon. Please write for me at the Institute or at antiwar.com anytime you want to.
I sure will. I sure will. Okay. Thanks a lot.
And everybody, you can read at antiwar.com on the blog right now is Karen's acceptance speech and Ray McGovern's dedication here from her Sam Adams Award for her great whistleblowing there. And then the show notes will include links to all the articles that were mentioned today as well. Thank you again so much, Karen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
All right, y'all. Thanks. Find me at libertarianinstitute.org, at scotthorton.org, antiwar.com, and reddit.com/Scott Horton Show. Oh yeah, and read my book, Fool's Errand, Timed and the War in Afghanistan, at foolserrand.us.